Welcome. This is our second episode of Sacktown Talks. I'm here with Rod Okamoto. As a reminder, Sacktown Talks is a space where we dedicate ourselves to chatting with Sacramento's movers, shakers, and eclectic personalities. Rod, do you mind introducing yourself to us?
Sure. Rod Okamoto, thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so happy that you came on.
No problem. So I'm a pharmacist. I've been area resident for my whole life. Started in Lodi. Went to UC Davis Medical Center. I'm a pharmacist, by the way, and live in Elk Grove and Galt at the moment. But so I've watched Sacramento grow over the years, and it's been a great adventure for me, for my family growing up, again, being a pharmacist and starting my own business. And so it's been a good ride.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that interested me about having you on is that you're sort of a Renaissance man, right? You're sort of like a high school athlete and star. I think you were in a band in college, Mystic Wine. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. And then Visitor was the other band.
Okay. and then you continued to express yourself artistically. You wrote a children's book. Mm-hmm. Continued to... I think maybe expressed that urge to create and started a business, NutriShare.
Mm-hmm. Correct. That's a good summary. I think I was thinking on the way, on the drive over, I was thinking that I think one thing I kind of wanted to maybe say, or I say to myself, is that, you know, I really wasn't, I grew up very poor in Lodi, and oldest of five, and it was just a struggle to financially, but it was a great childhood. And I always realized that really I wasn't really blessed with anything really special, but what I was blessed with was a lot of being pretty good at a lot of things. So I think that's where my pride is, that at least I didn't get height or great looks or other skills, or I wasn't a great musician. I was good enough to play and to be paid through high school and college and after graduating being a pharmacist. But so anyway, in a nutshell, I was able to use, I think, a lot of the creative gifts that I had from, I think, writing and creativity, art and music, in business, like as you say, in my business named NutriShare, and even the creation of that took out of the box thinking.
Okay.
So, but anyway, that's my quick thought, is that what I take for myself is, not gifted as I would have liked to have been. Like, I wouldn't mind just being really good at music, you know, making it big.
You're telling me you wouldn't mind being a rock star.
Yeah, there you go. That would have been, you know, number one job. But aside from that, you know, there were a lot of other gifts that were just pretty good, and to be able to take advantage of those has been probably more advantageous to me in the long run.
Sure. You know, that's interesting you say that. One of the folks that I look up to, and I'm sure he doesn't know this, is Joe Rogan, who's he is a stand-up comedian by trade. Also does the play-by-play commenting for the UFC mixed martial arts fights. Mm-hmm. He's also a black belt in Taekwondo and he was a serious Taekwondo competitor. Mm. He was very accomplished in Taekwondo and a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu as well. Also is, another one of these Renaissance man sort of guys, you know, who was sort of, you know, I think if you ask him, he would say he's not particularly gifted in any one of these things, but just sort of able to diligently apply himself in a variety of different areas and sort of get by in that manner.
Sure.
And you know, I sort of feel that way a little bit, myself. Good. I'm certainly not athletically gifted, at all, but I've, pursued, a little bit about your host, guys, you know, I've pursued, wrestling in high school and college, and then Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is a hobby for 8 years now. So, you know, my totality of time in that hobby is close to 15 years. So I'm sure if you were to, you know, to a casual observer, it looks like I'm maybe even talented, you know, but that's not actually the case, you know?
Well, I think, particularly in the in those athletic endeavors that you're talking about, wrestling and jiu-jitsu, is that I think passion and hard work, those are the things that could work for you,
mm-hmm.
where talent may or may not be the end all there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was a conference champion at wrestling, but but I knew there was another level above that I wasn't going to get to.
Right, right.
So, I guess I would say I'd rather be really good at a conference champion, uh-huh. not necessarily the state champion, because a lot of pressures go with that.
Oh yeah.
But then I digress. I was just saying that. Oh, so that's fine. A good way. If you see yourself that way, I think that's a good thing. I mean, then join the club.
So, how long were you involved? Is music something you grew up with? Or when did you sort of, you know, decide to sort of pick up the instrument and start making music?
Good question. I think my uncles were a little bit older than me. They're like my my mother's kid brothers, and we used to work in the grape fields. And one day, on the transistor radio, the Beatles "I Want to Hold Your Hand" came on, and we were laughing at it because it was like, so they just repeated "I Want to Hold Your Hand."
Yeah,
kids,
it's kind of trite.
You get it. Right? So my uncle was like, no, what, these guys are going to be really big.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but that kind of started my interest is to start listening to this, you know, rock and roll music. And it was, I had a passion for it. Same way is that, you know, I was never great. I was able, I wrote a few songs. I played lead guitar. I taught myself. Situations took me that place where I was playing backup guitar in a band, and then the lead guitar player left, and so I was the only guitar player, so I had to learn how to play.
So before you knew it, you were the front man?
I wouldn't say front man. I was the lead guitarist, and then I ended up singing some leads, but we had five vocalists, so it was really fun.
Wow.
We had lots of harmonies and stuff, a female vocal and whatnot, but I guess that's consistent with my overall story, is that not great talent,
mm-hmm.
but some passion and mm-hmm. lots of work. And so I ended up making money playing, you know, dances around Northern California.
Do you have any of your old vinyls or CDs, or is there anywhere I might be able to find this music?
You might be able to. My kids found a tape, and I'm trying to remember things like, which would be actually probably a good band to put together today. It was like Fleetwood Mac and Pat Benatar and Cars and whatever was on Top 40. We were a Top 40 band, but Tom Petty, and so it was stuff I still listen to sometimes.
Okay. And what were some of your musical influences? These Top 40s that you?
I think I kind of really connected with San Francisco rock. It's okay. You know, it was in New York and LA and England. But the San Francisco rock was included Grateful Dead and Quicksilver Messenger Service and Santana and Steve Miller Band and Doobie Brothers. In fact, my friend and I hired the Doobie Brothers to play at our high school all-night party because they said, when we were seniors and the other students said, you guys be the committee because you've been to concerts in San Francisco. And so we've seen the Doobie Brothers before, and they played the whole Toulouse Street album that became, they were on the way to becoming famous. We had heard this first time live from them at our party, and people were like, they're pretty good. And they ended up in the process of getting famous within 6 months, you know. But so that's a little bit of my music, San Francisco based. But then I think my best concert, my favorite concert, was watching The Who do Tommy, the whole album all the way through.
Oh, wow.
So that's my claim to fame of going to concerts, besides going to any Grateful Dead concert, which is awesome.
You know, that's good. An art form that I feel has, I think, unfortunately, lost some of its significance in the modern day, is the totality of the album, mm-hmm. you know, as a package of music. You know, I think in today's culture, we're, you know, they still make albums. There's still great albums out there. Don't get me wrong. But the, you know, with you being able to buy an individual song on iTunes or just stream it on YouTube for free, frankly,
mm-hmm.
There's less, I'm going to sit down and listen to this whole album,
mm-hmm.
you know? And, you know, an album as a narrative arc or as a package of music is a powerful thing. I recently got a vinyl player. Well, not recently, a couple of years ago. And I was at a garage sale and I bought Meatloaf's Bat Out of Hell. And frankly, I liked it because I wanted to put the cover art on my wall. That's the kind of guy though, you know, but I had no idea what the music was. I'd never heard of Meatloaf. I didn't know. And so I put it on and I just kind of put it on in the background while I would cook or whatever. And it's like, oh, this is catchy. This is catchy, you know? But I wasn't really listening. And then over time you maybe start listening, you know, you start listening to some of the harmonies and some of the choruses. And it's actually a deeply tragic narrative, you know, you know, one of the choruses goes, it was long ago and it was far away and it was so much better than it is today. And the, you know, the narrative arc of that album is such that, you know, he's a pretty despicable guy. If you hear him talk about, he's a womanizer, but towards the end, you actually oddly wind up feeling bad for him, you know, because he has his own behavior turned on him. And you realize that he's kind of just stuck in the muck, you know. That's a, it's a really powerful way to deliver, I think, a complete narrative, you know, as an album. And I, one that I wish was a little bit more common in today's.
It's a different medium. It was an experience. And so having the privilege of being raised or growing up at that age, I was like a little younger than the hippies.
Okay.
But I was obviously influenced by them, by that age, by that era. And so I got the pleasure of seeing week after week something new from the Beatles or something new from whoever, all the bands, The Who. And so we can able to kind of, and then go to their concerts and then experience their albums as they came out. And so that you would have enjoyed that as well. And at some point I look back and it was at some point in the process was thinking there was so much great music and I'm sure there's great music now, but I just stopped listening as ardently because part of why I was listening really is that what are we going to play at, you know, for a long time? And again, this started in high school and it went through after I was a pharmacist. And maybe this tells a little bit about me too, is that at one point we had, I had a business. I worked at UC Davis Medical Center. I played music every weekend and I had three kids. So twin boys and my daughter a year after. So at that point, my wife said, yeah, you have to stop the music. And so I did. I happily did. What I told myself, my mantra was that, you know, music was a passion, but so was the business. But the most passion was the family,
right?
You know, was the kids. So that's the way life goes. You know, you have a passion and you can change it for another one.
Right, right. I had read somewhere that part of the beauty in, you know, many of these Disney movies, the, you know, they end happily, but it's not the happy ending that the characters would have imagined for themselves. And so it's a way to teach children that, you know, the path that you take might not wind up being the one that you envision. Nonetheless, it is still a good way, can still be a good one.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, that's a good model for life. Not twists and turns.
Yeah.
And all that. So, and this might be random, but so why did you start doing these, podcasts?
Sure. Thanks for asking. I, you know, there's a sort of a confluence of events. I, you know, to be frank, I always kind of felt like I had the gift of gab. And so I remember, years ago I was catching up with an old friend and, you know, they'd ask me, well, what are you doing now? I says, oh, well, you know, I'm in politics. And she says to me, well, I'm glad you found a useful outlet for all of that. you know, when I think of my fondest memories, in my childhood, I was lucky enough to be raised by parents who just kind of spoke to their children. You know, my mom and dad were both newspaper folks. They both wrote for newspapers. So we were just kind of, you know, before they split up and after they split up, we were just kind of always talking. What do you think about this? What do you think about this? What do you think about that? And when I look back on my fondest memories on, catching up with friends, you know, experiences is a big one, but also just like the experience of just chatting and connecting with people. Right. because I've had varied interests, both, you know, athletically, I'm around a lot of prize fighters.
Okay.
You know, like over Ultimate mm-hmm. Fitness, you know, I'm also around a lot of elected officials. Right. And I'm also, you know, I just find the variety of stories and people that I have been privileged to be around to be totally remarkable. And I also want to combine that notion with, you know, this theory that I have that I think entertainment is changing. You know, if you get a, you know, we couldn't do this on TV, just talk, mm-hmm. you know, if I clear my throat, I clear my throat. It's just sort of, it's what it is, you know? Mm-hmm. I feel like news and then broader human interest pieces are being crammed into these like 3-minute segments, mm-hmm, you know, and you don't really get the time to fully appreciate the way that people's experiences influence and shape who they actually are, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that the best format for that is to just sort of chat. I can't tell you how many times I've been either at a, you know, at a diner or out with, you know, maybe having a conversation with previously a stranger and saying, man, I wish I could record this. I wish I could save this. This is an incredible story, you know? So, so that's part of what it is. Also, I think Sacramento, you know, is really just a remarkable city. When I moved here from San Diego, I moved here because I wanted to work for the legislature. Mm-hmm. You know, I miss surfing. I grew up surfing. Mm-hmm. So I deeply miss surfing. But the city grew on me in other ways. And one was just the caliber and quality of people that I was able to meet, you know? And you know, before you know it, I bought a house and I've been here for 7 years now, and I can't really imagine myself being anywhere else.
Great.
And so, I kind of had the idea to do this like 2 years ago, and I was just sort of reluctant. And, my girlfriend Haley, who's also your daughter, mm-hmm. You know, she frankly calls out to the better angels of my nature. And I said this in a podcast episode that I did for the Jiu-Jitsu podcast. Mm-hmm. You know, ideally in a partner, you have someone who can maybe see a vision of yourself that is even better than what you saw for yourself,
sure.
you know, and who calls out to the better angels of your nature. She said, no, you should do it. You know, and I was kind of procrastinating. You know, it's kind of scary to put yourself out there. Right. But, she sort of encouraged me, and it's been like a fun little adventure setting up this little studio and then emailing, you know, emailing guests and having people over. Mm. It's been a lot of fun. Mm. So that's how it started. And I just think I in my heart of hearts, I believe there's more entertainment value in just finding remarkable people and talking to them. That, you know, we don't need to have music and lights and stuff kind of playing into, you know, we can just talk, mm-hmm. I think.
Good. Very so, good. Very
yeah.
Good. No, you're right. I think the way we consume information about the world is different. And I think you're talking about newspapers, and I think that's it's fading away, yeah. but it's turning into something else, of course, and even television. You know, as our family growing up, you know, TV was the center of everything. We're now individual watching,
right,
and consuming information is happening more and more. So, but I applaud you for, you know, if you have interest and a passion, connection, and of those interests is really important. Because, and if your interest is people and this is a format where you can get to develop that, I think that's what a gift it is for yourself.
Thank you. You know? Thank you.
So,
you know, you were talking a little bit earlier about, you know, not to get too far down this rabbit hole, but just to quickly touch on this, you know, the nature and the way in which we consume information is changing. You know, I heard that you like to play video games to relax.
I do.
Yeah. And I was thinking about sort of like the history of gaming has quickly sort of evolved in a way that parallels the history of how we consume information. You know, at first we sort of had these like, you know, games as big as the systems could handle, you know, Pong or Tetris, you know, they're very small. Mm-hmm. And as we developed the technological capability, we began engrossing people into narratives. You know, and mm-hmm. so some of these games are deeply engrossing. They're really narrative arcs that you're traveling across. Mm-hmm. And there's also more of them. There's also more games, mm-hmm. a lot right. more. So you can sort of, right. you know, it's kind of a cafe. You can sort of, you know, pick what you want to do. Mm-hmm. And it's the same way with television. You know, I was thinking to myself that the, you know, it must have been a lot easier for society, for us all, to have the same, you know, collective sympathies and understandings of each other when there was three shows on TV and we all watched them together. Mm-hmm. And it says, oh, I saw that story and I now mm-hmm. sympathize with that trope, you know, right. where now we're probably watching stuff that reinforces our previously held beliefs and therefore sort of fragmenting, you know, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. but not to get too far off on that.
Yeah. That's a whole conversation. And it's intriguing. I think, although I guess, you know, human beings in general, will adapt to whatever, you know, whatever happens, whether you have zero high-tech access, social media, whatever, or if you're just totally involved in it, mm-hmm. Overall, the human being will turn out fine. You know, yeah. they'll still be able to talk to other people. And I think taking these two science fiction extremes is, anyway, yeah. not going to happen. And people are just... This is just what we experience at this point in time. Mm-hmm. But so let's see. What that reminded me of saying, well, going back to Sacramento a little bit.
Sure.
Is that I know that was one of your questions for me is what I saw in what I've witnessed in Sacramento. And, you know, the thing I guess I was going to say is that diversity is very interesting. You know, I go to Harvest Church in Elk Grove and it's a total mixture of all races, and I think mm-hmm. that's one of the reasons we like it so much. But the so Sacramento is diverse, number one. Whenever a visitor would come to our church, he'll say, this is what heaven looks like, 'cause it's
all the different races. That's beautiful.
But the other thing about Sacramento is that I've noticed from my point of view is that finally we're getting rid of the slum. I call it the slums, is that downtown was so undeveloped mm-hmm. and the powers that be allowed it for decades and more. And I never understood why. Why are you happy to have these dilapidated buildings downtown? So the vision I'm seeing now is that with the new arena, which confounds me, it's who would be opposed to that nonetheless.
Right, right.
The new businesses, the hotels that are going up there. I mean, why not make it nice? And so, yeah. Okay. So anyway, I never understood that. I'm not in politics, or I'm not in other bureaucracy. So I never, I'm only observing that I just see progress. And I think this is what it could be. And I don't know why my anger is, why was this allowed to not happen sooner? One of my friends said, as far as a vision, he said that he's in, Richards, his business was in Richards Boulevard and they had access to the river. And he said, wouldn't it be great, like the rail yards, or if somehow they incorporated the river into the city, like mm-hmm. San Antonio did, with the Riverwalk. So, you know, we can create something really special using the water. And I know there's a million reasons why that'll never happen, but I mean, but that's a great vision to me. That's a forward moving vision. In my opinion, it's not everybody's opinion that that's
sure,
that, that would be the way to go, but that's just my personal
answer. Yeah, to that your personal question. Answer to the question. That's fair. I no, it definitely has a unique charm. I for the longest time, I had the hardest time getting my family to come visit me.
Yeah, what is there to see?
Yeah, what's there to do? What's there to see? It's like, you know, if you just stay for a little while, you there's no one big thing. Okay, mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no one big thing. There's a state capitol. It's a gorgeous building. But it's not, you know, there's no, you know, beach or anything like that. It's not like San Francisco doesn't have that, that sort of cachet to it yet. But if you just stay for a few days, you'll find that the people are lovely. The spaces are amazing. And you can really live with real quality of life here. Mm-hmm. You know, now my sister's trying to figure out a way how to move up here.
Nice. Beautiful.
You know, she recently got a job offer in the Bay Area, which she wound up declining for other reasons, but she was looking at the, you know, at the pricing in the mm-hmm. Bay Area right. and the nature of her work. They were going to let her maybe telecommute a day or two. And she started, you know, she just started doing some math. She says, wait a second, maybe I might be able to live in Sacramento and commute a couple days a week. And I said, well, yeah, you know, there's a real charm is here, isn't there? She's like, yeah, I love it there.
Very cool.
You know? So can you walk us through NutriShare, what you do, the type of folks that you help, and sort of the vision that you had and scaling it up?
Yeah, this is this is the medium-sized version of this.
Sure, sure. Take as long as you want.
We'll lose a lot of people because it's sort of like this inside baseball niche that's hard to maybe hard to get interested in, but I'll try you.
Sure, sure.
Okay, here's how it goes. And it goes back to my whole history. So I started as a young pharmacist at UC Davis Medical Center in the late 70s, 77. And they threw me into the basement making this IV nutrition. It's called Total Parenteral Nutrition. And it was pretty new, but people were going home that otherwise could not eat orally and support themselves nutrition-wise. But we could feed them intravenously through their heart. And at some point, we could send them home and they could live that way. And so they're saving society lots of money.
Opening up bed spaces, freeing up resources, and exactly. also enhancing quality of life for a patient exactly. who now is mobile.
Exactly. So you're right. And at home. So that's called home TPN, home total parenteral nutrition. And so my story is that, I was doing that for a long time, and I would, once a week, these people would home TPN patients would come and collect their 1 liter bottles. Okay. And if you need 2 to 3 liters a night keep yourself alive, and some lipids, which is another bottle of fat, IV fat. So the TPN includes amino acids, protein, dextrose, electrolytes, trace minerals, vitamins, and fats, IV fats, and fluid. So that's how, and they would get it through their heart, and it bypasses the GI tract. So, why you might need that is surgeries, trauma, Crohn's disease is a disease that's commonly associated, motility disorders. And now we've found out mitochondria problems. So more things are causing it, and we're just learning that this has always existed, but now we're just learning why they would need this IV nutrition.
Interesting.
So this
is for folks who otherwise can't break down their own food.
Right. They can't absorb enough orally because the machinery is not there.
Okay.
Either not enough, probably mostly not enough intestine. Large or small intestine, sometimes no stomach. Okay. Wow. People are in different situations. But what I guess I'll say, so this lady, I was loading her car up, and she said, I said, you know, there's 10 boxes and they're pretty heavy. How do you get them into your refrigerator? And she said, well, I open up all the doors to my house and I take one box into the refrigerator and then I sit and rest. Then I go and take another one.
Oh, my goodness.
And so I said, next week I'll just deliver to you, you know, after work. And so I did. And then I delivered to another one or two patients. And then it occurred to me that, you know, I should be getting paid for this. And so I went to the university and said, so, you know, can I get mileage? And they said, no, we didn't know you were doing this and you need to stop. Immediately. So I said, well, okay, I don't want to stop, but
you're helping people.
Right. Can I start a business? Pharmacy, my own pharmacy. I know what to do and send it to them myself. And they said, sure. It's like they went to conflict of interest committee at UC Davis. And they said, sure, you can do that. It's like a doctor having their own private practice. Because I said, I need a job. So I started that. At the same year in 1979 as one or two other companies were doing it. So I'd like to say I invented this home TPN, but I didn't. Anyway, I started it the same year as two or three others for the first time.
Okay.
So I did that and shortly, soon after, we were asked to do, can you do IV antibiotics since you have a central line? We said, sure, let's try that.
Sorry about that. I should put that on silent. We're still going.
Okay. Oh, sorry. So IV antibiotics, we started to do that. IV chemotherapy at home with using that catheter. pain control for hospice patients. So we investigational drugs. So we started to expand it. So now look back now, it's called the home infusion pharmacy industry. So many, many pharmacies all over the United States doing this. But about, 26 years ago, 26 years ago, so I was working in the industry. I started my independent company, sold it, worked for a bigger company. Mm-hmm. And this is, when was this? This was the late 80s. So what was big at the time was doctor kickback deals. Oh. Where pharmacies would pay doctors for referrals.
Wow.
So you didn't know this was going to be hot topic here. So anyway, so
that seems like it should be
not legal.
Yeah.
It wasn't spelled out at the time. A politician named, I think Stark, started questioning that practice. Nonetheless, so it was legal at the time. There was even a public company that was trading on the New York Stock Exchange that said, our proposition is that doctors that refer to us will get shares of our business.
Oh, my goodness.
So in that environment in the late 80s, I was working for a big pharmacy, national pharmacy and home infusion pharmacy. And they said, you know, why aren't you doing any of these? And I said, well, I really don't want to. I don't think we need to. And so I was fired around 1990. In 1991.
So just to be clear, they terminated you for not participating in their practice, which was later found illegal.
That's my position. Okay. So that's how I remember it. But anyway, so so I thought, you know what we started this with years ago was the home TPN patient. And no other company is going to the consumer to ask them, would you like to be our customer? And nobody also thought of doing it nationally. Me going to a patient in the East Coast from Sacramento and saying, or from Elk Grove, technically, can I ship to you? Because this is basically an easy process. Well, it's easy if you know what you're doing. So the proposition was I'll overnight your TPN once a week to Boston and we'll monitor you. We'll hire the best clinicians that specialize in this care. We'll make sure there's no delivery problems, no inventory problems. We do research into products that would serve you best. And so that was the idea for NutriShare. It's like, we'll go to patients one at a time and say, you have a choice. It's your right to choose your pharmacy. You're not a prisoner of your doctor or the hospital or the insurance company or the discharge planner. You have that right. So choose us or don't choose us. But if you choose us, we're going to dedicate everything we do to your quality of life.
Right.
Whether it's
and to your unique, it's researched into your unique malady, your unique issue, right?
Well, what you're looking for from me is a dependable product that's absolutely sterile, you won't run out of product, that we respect your right not only to choose us or not choose us, but to the products you want to use, the research that will improve your quality of life, decrease complications for you. That's what you want from me.
Right.
And then our question was, well, what else can we do for you? We can introduce you to other patients. We held national conferences where you can meet other families. So we'll do research. We have a newsletter to inform you of what we know. So,
you know, just to touch on that quickly, I went to your dinner at the Railroad Museum last year.
Yes,
exactly. And you had a lot of your patients there. And it was kind of cool. You have like a little community.
Yeah.
That's our, you know, family. Folks were there to support each other, to catch up. That was a really unique and remarkable experience that you sort of created a community of support where one previously did not exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And these patients came from all over the United States. So that was, and those were all parts of the business reason, all parts of the business reasons why it worked was, first of all, it was just an idea when I started from scratch in 1991, but it grew. And I think you had asked me a question of when did I know it was going to work?
Right.
And actually, I knew about it before we started, is that as soon as the idea came that
you just knew you had the golden ticket, or
yeah, that's it. No one had ever tried, had the faith in overnight delivery at the time.
Oh, interesting.
And so that instead of your community being your universe of marketplace, it was the whole United States. So that changed. And so I had gone to a meeting of patients in New York. It was a picnic for patients in Albany, New York. And I went there and talked to patients. I said, you know, if you were to start a pharmacy, what would you want to, how would you want to see it? And it was many of the things that we discussed. It was, I want my deliveries to be right. I want to feel important. I want to, you know, meet other people. And there's all these things. I want my team to be experts. At the time, even at the time, home infusion had maybe 30 different therapy types. And even today, I would call them generalist home infusion pharmacies. But we have one, and we're going to jealously stick to the just the one. And if we're loyal to that, something powerful can happen, was our theory. And it's 26 years now, and it's the same pitch. If you were our patient or a candidate, the same pitch that I gave in the first day as I give now. I knew financially the model was going to work. The question is, would people trust us to do that? And the answer is they did.
So what was the process like of actually taking this thing soup to nuts? Did you have to go out and get investors? Was it small enough where you could sort of slowly scale on your own? How did that work?
Yeah, it was probably small enough to scale on our own, but we got investors, and it was profitable from day one. But we had to invent everything.
What was making those pitches to the investors like? What was that process like?
It was the best process in the world for me, because getting disappointed, you know, I meet 20 different people and we got one investor.
All you need is one.
But every time I did, well, every time I did one and got rejected, I was asked a question in a way that prepared me to answer it better the next time. And what a pleasure that was, because I gave that same pitch. If you're a patient, if you're an investor, if you were an insurance company, and that's the thing, we had to invent everything. Like, how do we bill it? You know, how, because they would say, oh, we've never seen this before. So that was, you know what, that was exciting, I guess I'd say. Hmm. But again, going back to even what you were saying earlier, is the interest, passion was there. But the interest, again, in the people, is that I would listen to your story if you were a patient, and I would just be intrigued. I mean, you'd be my hero. And it's my pleasure to do something for you or be part of your care. Mm-hmm. So, again, I think that interest carries on to whatever business you want to do or endeavor you want to pursue. So that's my 60 plus years of life summary. But so it's integrated into the NutriShare company.
How's your role in NutriShare changed as the company has grown and scaled and established itself?
Hmm.
I mean, I would.
Good question.
I would guess you're running around less now.
Yeah, running around less, and you know, hired really good people. So the staff, you know, they don't know it yet, but they don't need me because they're so good. And part of it is luck and part of it is skill. Most of it is luck, I guess, in building this team. For a long time, I was an avid reader of all management books. I loved it. I still kind of do. And implementing those, incorporating those into things I try to do to build the business. I think the most recent one is The Happiness Advantage, Sean Acor.
Okay.
I just went to a lecture of his, and his thing was, is to me, it interpreted as purpose and being a light for other people. Okay, hang on to those two things, and you know, you're going to go a long way. His outrageous statement is, you can change other people's behavior. Okay, don't say you can't, because if you choose to be happy, you can influence people. And I'll tell you one of his stories, if that's okay. Sean Acor, crediting
sure, him, sure.
Is that one of his stories, or the way I listened to it when I heard him speak, was he was asked by the Mayo Clinic to do happiness counseling or whatever. And so he implemented the Ritz-Carlton's 10-5 principle, is that you recognize a person as you're walking down, passing them at 10 feet, and at 5 feet, you say something to them. Mm-hmm. And so they did that at Mayo Clinic as an experiment, and they found that clinical outcomes started to improve when they started this program. So, in fact, the doctors that refused to participate, their clinical outcomes improved as well.
Huh.
Just by
being around it,
focusing on choosing to be happy and friendly, right? To me, that ties into purpose. Is what better purpose than to be a light for other people? And there was a sermon message that it was exactly the same thing about a month before. And so I'm tying that in to a revelation, I suppose, of that. And, you know, what better? And I've told all my staff, read this, watch his TED talk, and, try to incorporate this, because there's something really, maybe it describes what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Our purpose is to help our family of patients that we discussed before, number one, and number two, and to bring whatever light we can to their life. And, you know, what better statement? You know, what better purpose?
Yeah, that's really positive. That's really very positive. And thank you for sharing that with us.
Oh, you're welcome.
One thing I found interesting that you just said was that you said that you sort of just started voraciously studying these management books as almost for hobby, for mm-hmm. pleasure, you know? You know, going back to this sort of Renaissance man type of theme that I have for you, you went from working on a grape field to now owning a vineyard, and you sell those grapes, right? You've also started a number of other business ventures here in town.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in Midtown, I'd highly recommend Table Vine if you've not already had a cocktail or a bite to eat there. I mean, the food is just fantastic. You have an excellent team there. To Pearl on the River, which is a previous venture of yours. And then also the Elk Grove Baseball Center, which mm-hmm. is, I think, your latest venture here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to grab this here.
No problem.
We'll put this up on the screen. You got 8 batting lanes, 2 batting cages, indoor 50-foot practice field, indoor year-round baseball training facility for teams and individuals looking for that competitive edge in batting, fielding, speed, agility, and pitching. How did you get into this?
I suppose, I mean, all these things kind of find me. And if you followed that NutriShare story, I didn't think I was going to create this, but it was a need that I was just meeting the needs of a patient, and it grew into then why not this and why not
that? Right. And then you sort of found that you enjoyed managing this organization and managing it with purpose and consistent with values that are informed by your human decency and your faith and mm-hmm. other things. Right? You just sort of enjoyed that process of management and expressing yourself through it.
Exactly. All of that. I think this one, the Elk Grove Baseball Center, came because a friend of mine, there was in the Elk Grove community, baseball is very big. And so there were teams that were having co-ops, and they're renting facilities and putting up the batting lanes and stuff for when the weather got bad, so for a competitive edge. And he wanted to do it as a private business. So I've known him for a long time. So I helped him do that. And fairly recently, and he could not do that. He got another job, et cetera. And so I stepped up and decided, let me try this, and let me try to see if I can get it, fine-tune this business. And so it's been really fun. It's been, you know, really a labor of love, and the challenge has been really fun. It's in Laguna, near Dwight, in Laguna, near I-5, and it's, so we're just starting it up, and we're signing up teams, and it's been great fun and a different challenge, unlike anything I've had to do before. The stepping back aside a little bit and saying that, you know, NutriShare, you had asked me, is kind of with the people I have, you know, it does run itself in a way. And my role is, and which I didn't answer before, really is to look for new opportunities and for the business and try to keep stay ahead of where things are going and how do we avoid pitfalls or how do we take advantage of different situations. So my role is a little bit different there. So as opposed to this baseball center, which is a matter of patching holes in the wall and, you know, reinventing the pricing structure, trying to get more organization into the system. And again, all those are fun things for me. Incremental improvements. I said, you know, I love incremental improvements. If I can make this a little bit better, replace this sign with this bigger sign or whatever. Mm-hmm. Those are fun things for me. But Table Vine, the restaurant, was a similar thing. Is that things, opportunities find me. I don't really find them. As a friend of mine wanted to start a restaurant, and we bought what is now Pearl on the River, which still exists. Mm-hmm. Although I sold that and started a new restaurant called Table Vine, and Dan Snead is the restaurateur for that. And that was really fun. That whole process, I learned a lot in the restaurant business. The lease is the most important thing.
Really?
Oh, wow. You can't ignore the lease. The lease is a very, very key part of the business.
Why is that?
Because it could be your downfall financially. If you don't find a really great opportunity, and let me just speak for my own. I'm not a restaurateur, but what I've learned is that that's what I tell somebody is really watch that, regardless of the other stuff, what you want to do. The other thing that Dan has taught me is that you let your customers teach you what restaurant you're going to be. And so what he knows is service from Ritz-Carlton, San Francisco, and Gary Danko's famous restaurant that he was part of for 11 years. And he helped the Wong family and a lot of other Sacramento restaurants. And his philosophy when he came on board, when I sold Pearl and we started Table Vine, is that I said, well, what about marketing? And he said, well, no, what I want to do is to convince each customer to come back and to listen to the community, say what they want. And Table Vine, what it is, in my opinion, is fine dining experience, relaxed atmosphere, but a neighborhood joint, mm-hmm. neighborhood place to go. It's on the opposite side of the state capitol as where cafeteria is and all those Firestone. Mm-hmm. So it's tucked away a little bit. So anyway, I love it. I recommend it.
Right, it's on the 13th or 14th and O.
14th and O.
14th and O.
In the town. But Dan, so service is good, food is good, and Dan's and it's a comfortable atmosphere. So Dan's philosophy is just keep on doing more of that and listening to what the customers tell you, which is not a lot different than NutriShare. So it all kind of ties in.
Sure.
And again, what we hope to do at the baseball center as well is to make the customer experience to optimize it again by listening and having a heart for the customer.
Right. And for the experience that you're selling.
Exactly.
So, and you know, you don't have to answer this if you don't want, we can cut this out, but you know, it sounds like you have a formula for success, like a basic sort of a vision for what you're trying to do with your businesses. You know, NutriShare, you were you hit it out of the ballpark, profitable from day one, as you said. Restaurants maybe not always so profitable in the start, and I don't, maybe perhaps the baseball center also. To what extent do your convictions start running out when you're kind of, you know, I don't know if you're, you know, if you're in the red month after month, what's that deliberation like as an owner, as an investor, and say, well, I believe I'm guided by a winning formula here, and I believe in this vision, mm-hmm. but oh my goodness, the lease is due, the rent is due, we're throwing away food. It's not catching on as quickly as I want. Like, what's that like? Or if you haven't had to deal with that, if they've all been successes, even better. But
yeah, I guess I'll answer it. A couple of things occur to me is that One is that, yes, you have to be realistic about things. And so if you want to run a business that continue to lose money all the time, but if you can afford to and you want to, then by all means do that. That's not interesting to me.
Right.
I do want to say that, you know, faith is in this as well. If you have faith in the heart for something, then go for it. But being a pragmatist is probably describing me, is that let's try to anticipate everything we can. Let's improve. Let's provide the best experience, et cetera, for the customer. But in the end, if it's not working, then you need to be realistic and figure out what is the exit strategy for that business. But while you're in it, just keep on making improvements, you know.
So what advice do you have for sort of, you know, folks looking to go out into business for themselves? Is there any sort of advice you could sort of give out universally?
You know, I guess I'd say you should do it. You know, you have an idea, go do it, because you might fail, but that's not the worst thing. You know, by all means, if you don't have the basic toolkit, you probably will fail. The toolkit being show up on time, being responsible, doing what you promised you're going to do, work hard. You know, if you're not willing to do that, then don't do it. but you should, if you have a interest in something and you're prepared to do the work, try it. You know, and maybe you can even, if you can hedge your bet by trying it as a hobby or trying it as a pilot project or a trial. And like, I think I heard the words you said earlier, you know, if there is a scaling up opportunity, I think it'll present itself. But sort of like you're doing, you're not sure where this is going with the podcast, but just do it, because you can do it on your own terms. And, sure. And who knows where the adventure will go.
Right.
But just being in the adventure is better than just saying, I wish I did that.
Yeah.
You know?
So. Yeah, I don't want to look back on opportunities not taken, right?
Right. And it's a lesson. You know, even a failure is a lesson. So, and there's nothing you haven't heard, and, you know, everybody hasn't heard before, but that's my answer.
Sure. we often hear about the challenges of running a business in California. Mm-hmm. Certainly in my previous role in the state legislature, it was sort of a recurring trope. And it's, you know, not having been a business owner myself, it's hard to sort of gauge that. Can you talk a little bit about the challenges and opportunities of doing business in Sacramento and California?
Well, I mean, it's where I live, and there's no coincidence that NutriShare's first office was in Elk Grove, California, because that's where I live. And yeah. So I guess one thing I would say, I could probably answer this better, but the way I feel like I want to answer it is, we looked into, is there ways to incorporate other places? And the accountant always figures out, somebody's always figured out ways you think you've outsmarted government or the regulations or the laws or the IRS. And so, you know, every creative idea is like, you just can't do that. Mm-hmm. So we just settled into, this is where we live. So, you know, let's put up with the state and city and county, you know, all the regulations.
Sure.
This is what we're, that's just what we're faced with. So let's just deal with that, I guess. And so that goes back to pragmatism and, mm-hmm. and all the decisions we've made. That's just be happy in that, you know, in where you are, because there's blessings in being in California as well as things we can complain about.
Absolutely.
I do this week, in the theme of businesses, I do want to try to remember this the latest one that you've probably not heard about that I'm helping with.
Sure.
And it may or may not fit in this narrative or not, but I'll just tell you, a friend of ours wanted to start this business, and he's starting it. His name's Dominique Bucasa.
Okay.
It's called
Bridgeline Academy. We talked about that. Yeah, talk to us a little bit about Bridgeline. Actually, that's a really interesting concept.
It's very interesting because I think it's timely and I think it's relevant. Is that he Dominique is a basketball coach in Delta College, and he came upon this idea that his unique experience has contacts with the high tech industry and with teachers, and his overall goal is to introduce high tech companies with minority students.
Okay.
Because there is a disconnect there, is that the high tech companies want more minority students, and minority students want to see what are the opportunities to
right.
to get into that world. I believe his number is either 2 or 4% of workers in the high tech industry are minority.
That's brutal.
So, with those underpinnings, his that basic principle, his mission is to create seminars where students will have an audience with the high tech companies and the high tech companies. So just think of it as a conference of high tech companies presenting to the students. So you have all that happening in that stew, that soup. You have the students being exposed to the companies, visualizing how they can find a job there. You have the high tech companies reaching to the students. And for society, there's a cause, you know, involved there. There's
there's a clear social benefit there.
Social benefit, again, a business benefit for the company, for the students, again, for society to get to make this more right.
Okay.
And so he's developed this. He's at least got a system. Everybody's stepping up. Schools are stepping up. Cities are stepping up. The high tech companies are stepping up. His first meetings, his first conference is within the next 30 days, and then another in Los Angeles, and he says another one in the Bay Area. And so he's asked me my advice, and I really haven't given him that much good advice, but except for encouragement to say that I love where his business is headed at this point, and just, you know, wish him well. And I'm going to volunteer at a conference, at his conferences as well.
You know, that's really possible. Yeah. I might have to have Dominique on.
Definitely. Yes.
Yeah. You know, it's really heartbreaking, I think, to see when the opportunities for upward social mobility present themselves in the arc of our society, that the least among us are not able to participate in them. Mm-hmm. So it's really heartening to see somebody like Dominique step up to help bridge that divide, you know? So I'll reach out to him and see if we can have Dominique on. Let me see. You know, I had this whole like list of topics here. I'm wondering if there's anything that I haven't asked you. You know what? This one just came to mind, and again, you don't have to answer this if you don't want to. But you sort of seem to be interested in management and in sort of helping to express and create a better vision for something that you see is not being completed, right? Or providing a social benefit and also making a little bit of money if you can. You know, Do you ever look more broadly at like society and say, yeah, maybe I could do some good as an elected official?
I love that question. Because it's just a surprise. No, I never thought about that. I'm taking that as a compliment for you to have said that. I don't know that I would reject that totally. I don't see that really in my skill set. But because I have my world of my definition of what my skills are and talents are, but I just mainly take it as a compliment. What a nice thing to say.
That's a great answer, actually. Okay. This one's for fun. As we wrap this up, what was the last great thing you ate in Sacramento?
Oh my gosh.
You know, I'll tell you what, I'll start off here.
Go ahead, do it.
Haley and I went to Bandera.
Okay.
And we went there after the gym, just sort of an impromptu little day. They have a lovely bar,
mm-hmm.
you know. And she says to me, "Oh my God, these are the best mashed potatoes." I said, "Wrong. Those are the second best mashed potatoes. I make the best mashed potatoes." But they really have truly amazing mashed potatoes as a side dish there. And then their house salad is just the best. Let me tell you, I've had any number of half-hearted house salads where it's really just a tomato in half and maybe a little bit, you know, a carrot here, and it's drenched in vinaigrette. And it's really, you know, I could have made that. It's not like a, not Bandera's house salad. Let me tell you, it is an almanac of fruits, nuts, and vegetables,
good.
Sprinkled in, I think, a goat or feta cheese, and with like a sauce that is uniquely their own. My goodness, that was. I'm gonna go back just for that salad.
Good for you. And I'm getting hungry too. My answer is, I gotta say, it's gotta be Table Vine and their schnitzel.
Okay.
Their Wiener Schnitzel, which is really kind of a, I guess it's a pork fried breaded pork cutlet. And when I go with other people and I go again, they're ordering that over and over again. but they have their specials, seafood, other things they do, steaks are really good. The other thing is my wife's adobo.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, Dan Sneed at Table Vine is entertaining the idea of putting that on the menu. I said, I don't know if that'll work, but he's considering it. The meat is delicious and homemade recipe. And she, I've been starting to, I put everything in a sandwich, and I would have a spaghetti sandwich.
Sure.
Often. And so I would put this adobo in a sandwich. So I'm trying to sell it to Dan as you can do it as a sandwich for lunch, and you put it over rice and coleslaw or something for dinner. And so, you might see that.
Okay. We'll be on the lookout. Well, thank you, Rod.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for coming on. Everybody, this has been our second episode of Sacktown Talks. We hope you enjoyed the talk. You can find us on Facebook and YouTube at Sacktown Talks, as well as Twitter and Instagram. Thank you.